Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised. Loveline with Dr. Chris starts.
3, 2, 1.
Now.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Jen Mann, sitting in for Dr. Chris while he is out here on Loveline. I'm a licensed psychotherapist. For those of you who may not recognize my voice, you may have seen me on TV on VH1 Couples Therapy with Dr. Jen, or on Family Therapy with Dr. Jen, or you might have heard me on the Dr. Jen Show on another radio station. I'm also an author. I've written a few books, The Relationship Fix, Dr. Jen's Six-Step Guide to Improving Communication, Connection, and Intimacy. I've also written a book called Super Baby, 12 Ways to Give Your Child a Head Start in the First 3 Years, and The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids. I've got a sex and relationship column that comes out every Wednesday on InStyle, in InStyle magazine, called Hump Day with Dr. Jen. But I am here tonight to take all of your calls. You know the number. Just give me a call. But first, before I take any calls, and by the way, that number, just in case you don't know, it is 833-568-3001. That's 833-568-3001. The first thing I want to talk about before we get to calls is something that is the most common, or one of the most common, relationship communication issues that I see couples make this huge mistake. And it's so common. So many people do it. And you probably do it. I've done it before, I admit. I'm not perfect. But I see it in almost every couple I've ever worked with. And that is over-focusing on the details. And what you have to realize, and you know, I've seen couples argue over, no, you were 11 minutes late. No, I was 8 minutes late. Who cares? It doesn't matter. The details really don't matter. What matters is the person's emotional experience. And what you have to keep in mind is that everybody has a subjective experience. You can have two people, you have two witnesses in a room who witness a crime, who describe it completely differently. And if you've ever heard of that movie, Rashomon, where the whole movie is all about two people who are in a room who witness something and have completely different experiences of it. And it's not that one is wrong and one is right. There are just different subjective experiences that we have. And we tend to lose our ability to see our partner's perspective when we get so overly focused on the details. And what you have to keep in mind, a lot of the time, people are trying to affect change in the relationship when they're doing this. But people don't change without feeling understood. And when you tell your partner to change, you're more likely to get rebellion. But if you are able to understand their perspective, if you're able to make them feel seen, heard, and understood, they're far more likely to melt. Season one of my show, Couples Therapy with Dr. Jen, there was a couple who was the perfect example of this. This is Angelina Pavarnik and Chris Nichelle. It was season one, and they had an argument in session that aired that was all about he had a relationship with his manager that she felt was not too kosher, and he finally admitted that they had hooked up before he had met Angelina, and he literally argued with her about how many times he had hooked up. And they went back and forth about whether it was one time or two times. Who cares? It doesn't matter. What matters is her experience, how it makes her feel to know that, and to know that that woman was still managing him at the time. And keep in mind, a relationship is not a court of law. Accuracy is less important than understanding the other person's experience. That is everything. That is connection. So a couple little tips before I get to calls. Don't correct your partner and insist on specifics. Focus on the feelings, not the specifics. Learn what the experience was like from your partner's perspective. Don't tell him or her how to express themselves. No, you're doing it wrong. You're saying it wrong. Have empathy for your partner and ask lots of questions. Ask open-ended questions. Tell me more about why you feel that way. I want to hear more. And look to problem solve wherever you can. I'm Dr. Jen Mann. I am a licensed psychotherapist, and I'm here tonight to take all of your calls, give you advice, answer your questions at 833-568-3001. Harper, welcome to the show.
Hi, Dr. Jen.
Hey there, Harper.
Hi. I was calling to get advice on how to kind of break the cycle of going into like a freeze mode when I'm feeling either pressured sexually or when I'm arguing in a relationship.
And are you in a relationship right now?
I actually just exited one recently, but it's definitely like a pattern with me.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask you, to me, freezing around sex and freezing during an argument feel different. Do they feel the same to you? Do they feel connected?
No.
Okay.
And just kind of a little background, I do have PTSD.
I was going to say, it's usually a sign of trauma. What kind of trauma have you had that you are freezing?
So I had severe childhood trauma. I grew up in a really emotionally and somewhat physically abusive household, and I had a lot of sexual childhood trauma as well as childhood rape.
I had a feeling. I'm so sorry, Harper. It's a lot.
Thank you.
It's a lot to deal with, and there's so many things about what you're describing that are so traumatic. And one of the things is how it rewires your brain. And how what you're describing is a very, very normal reaction when you've had that kind of trauma. What I would like to do is I would like to talk to you about this more. Can you hold with me while we go to some music? Because I really want to address this more thoroughly, and we're kind of running out of time here. Okay, so don't go anywhere.
Absolutely.
Harper, and all of you listening, don't go anywhere, because I think what Harper is dealing with is something a lot of people are dealing with, whether you've had trauma or not.
Love line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Jen Mann. I am not Dr. Chris, but he'll be back next week. I'm sitting here for you. I'm a licensed psychotherapist ready to take all of your calls at 833-568-3001. And I'm on the line with Harper. And Harper called me because she wants to know how to break the cycle that she is freezing when it comes to sex or in the middle of an argument. So Harper, are you there with me?
I am. Yeah.
Okay. So look, the first thing that's really important is picking safe people. And a lot of the time when you've had a lot of trauma, like you've described with your childhood, that there was so much emotional, physical, and sexual kind of trauma and abuse, it makes it difficult to pick good people. And sometimes it makes your picker can be off. So the first thing is going to be to pick the right kind of people who are compassionate and patient and also have empathy. That's going to be kind of a key thing. A lot of the time, especially as ladies, we make lists, kind of the wish list of what kind of partner we like to have. And sometimes we think about a lot of the superficial things, but empathy is really a key factor in a partner, especially for someone who's been through trauma. The other thing is to make boundaries, to make boundaries early on in the relationship, to see how the partner reacts. When you're trying to screen someone to see if they are good boyfriend or girlfriend material, you really need to make sure that they respond well to boundaries, that they don't give you a hard time, that they don't push past it, that they don't get aggressive, that they don't get hostile or, God forbid, violent. And once you're in a relationship, obviously it's really key to let your partner know about the trauma that you've experienced and to see how they react. And I'm assuming that your partner knew.
Not all of it, no.
So you just told them kind of the tip of the iceberg?
Yeah, I didn't tell them the full extent. I wasn't fully comfortable. I've gotten to the point where I try to test the boundaries a lot.
In what way?
Just kind of seeing if they respect lines, like comfort points and different things like that.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And I tend to find that I tend to pick people that don't respect boundaries.
Mm-hmm. And how
and
quickly are you able to? How quickly are you able to figure that out?
Sometimes I've gotten better, and I think sometimes it's usually within like a month or so.
Okay, that's pretty good. Yeah, that's pretty good. So really, a key factor in all of this is picking those safe people. So they are people that you can make boundaries. I like that you're testing to see how people respond to boundaries before you share too much information, because it's important to be able to be vulnerable in a relationship, but we need to make sure that the person we are with is worthy of our vulnerability, that they will handle it with tenderness and care, and that to be able to tell your partner that you weren't able to tell your partner about the trauma is a red flag. And it sounds like you've got pretty good instincts. And then really the final thing I want to mention to you is that when you are in a relationship, one of my favorite tools for couples is timeouts. I'm not that fond of them for kids, but I really like adults taking timeouts. That when things get too heated, because a lot of the time what happens is we get triggered, we're angry, we go into the primitive part of our brain instead of the thinking part of our brain. And we cannot have a rational, reasonable conversation that's going to result in anything positive when we're in that state of mind. So I always recommend that couples have a deal together. Either one of us calls a timeout, we take a timeout. The timeout has a beginning, a middle, and an end. So it's not just like, timeout, and then you don't speak and you don't know when you're going to speak again. I need a timeout. I'm really triggered. I don't think this is productive right now. Let's meet back in the kitchen in an hour. And it's okay an hour from then when you meet in the kitchen, be like, I'm still so triggered. I can't think straight. You know, let's sleep on this and talk in the morning. But there needs to be a boundary that says, okay, this is when we're going to talk again. Otherwise, people get too anxious. I'm Dr. Jen Mann.
I like
This is Loveline. And I am now talking to Brittany in Austin.
Hello.
Hi there, Brittany.
This is Lori.
Oh, they put me on with Lori. Okay, Lori in Illinois.
Yes, hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Lori?
I'm great.
Tell me what is going on with you, Lori.
Okay, so in May, I was, I reunited with an ex. Well, he wasn't really an ex, but he was someone that I had past dealings with. Nothing really in terms of love, but more of a romantic type friendship. And so we reunited via social media. And then Mother's Day weekend, he proposed. And at that point in time, we had only been talking from...
He proposed to you?
Yes. I'm sorry, proposed to me, yes.
Okay, because it kind of sounded like it was a friendship with benefit. When you say, like, it was a romantic friendship, it makes me go, oh, is it... friends with benefits? Like, what is that?
Like, he always had a crush on me, but I never entertained him in college. And so he was just kind of like the friend that was hanging out with his clique, and I had my clique of friends. It was some flirtation, but nothing ever deeper than that.
But then,
so
did you actually
we were just
date?
Really cool.
Like, before he proposed to you?
No.
Was it...
No. So,
seriously?
Like, we were just talking.
Hold on, sorry. I hear a lot of crazy stuff, but you're kind of blowing my mind. So you were kind of flirting around each other in college, and then college is over. You're kind of friends with benefits. Were you sleeping together?
Okay, so after college, then I went my way and he went his way. And then we became Facebook friends. So it was like we disappeared. We didn't talk for like a long time, like almost 10 years.
Okay,
so
but I'm asking, was there skin-on-skin contact before he proposed to you?
I mean, no. I mean, we...
Wow, this is kind of bizarre.
We
recognize
out,
that, right?
Yeah, I do recognize it.
I guess
for me, I was blinded. So here's the deal. It's like...
What's the real deal?
So the real deal is... So the proposal happened, but then after the proposal, my sister came into town and, you know, we went out and I posted some pictures on Facebook, and he was supposed to meet my sister. He was upset because I went missing, as he said, for 2 hours because my sister was in town and I was enjoying her company, and he was upset. And so he basically shut down. And then after that, basically, the next day, he took back the engagement ring and was like, I can't do this. You're not showing me that you're ready to be a wife.
Okay, Lori, this is like the best thing that ever happened to you, that he took back the ring.
That's what everyone said. They said I dodged a bullet.
Okay.
But my self-esteem is affected by it, and that's where I'm trying to get help at.
Okay, but here's where I'm actually about to zero in. You just said a key word. What is going on with you that
right.
you were willing to get engaged to a man who you don't really know? I mean, you guys kind of played around in each other's orbits in college. You didn't really date. You never took the car for
right.
a test drive. You never had any skin-on-skin contact. And you never really dated. So
correct.
What is going on with you? And I hate to use this word, like, forgive me for a moment.
No.
But why are you so desperate that you would actually get engaged to a man that you are not dating, that you've never slept with, that isn't investing in you?
Yeah, I mean, and that's, you are absolutely right. I mean, what I did is I brought him around my parents. I mean, we had a big dinner after that.
No, I don't need to know what you did. No, Lori, this is about you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about your parents. I don't care who met who. I care about that you, like, I like people to date for at least 18 months before they get engaged, because typically the honeymoon period, you know, at the beginning, everyone's like, oh, you like peas. I like peas. Oh, my God, we're so perfect for each other. All you can see is how you're alike. You've got endorphins going and oxytocin. Everything's wonderful and delightful, and you can see nothing wrong in each other. It takes about 18 months to get past that, chemically, emotionally, and physically. But you didn't even have that. So try to answer me in one sentence. I know this is challenging. What is it about you that made you think that getting engaged to spend the rest of your life, to be someone's wife, that it was a good idea to do that with someone who you never really dated, who never put the time and energy and investment in you over the long term?
I think I bought into the facade of the image of being a wife. I think that's what I really desperately was clinging to.
I appreciate that, Lori. And I think that that's really the crux of the problem. And I think that sometimes as women, we get too caught up in the title, in the elevation of ourselves as a wife, that somehow that makes us better or more worthy, or that society will view us differently. And I think, Lori, that your job is to build up your self-esteem so that it is not dependent on being someone's wife, someone's girlfriend, someone's anything. That you are coming from a place of, I have such a wonderful, amazing life. I can't wait to see how much this guy's willing to invest in me. He'd be so lucky to get to be in my life. I'm Dr. Jen Mann. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and I will be right back.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Jen Mann. I am sitting in here for Dr. Chris, but he will be back next week. I'm a licensed psychotherapist here to answer all of your questions about, well, anything that is on your mind, sex, love, dating, relationships, family, career, you name it. I am here for you. The number is 833-568-3001. And I'm on the line with Nikolai.
Hi, this is Nikolai.
Nikolai, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
So, I recently got into a relationship with a guy.
Mm-hmm.
We ran into each other at the beach. Like, we went to elementary school and then ran into each other after years of not seeing each other.
Mm-hmm.
But my question is, because I have a history of trauma, I'm internationally adopted, and so most of my relationships last, like, it's really hard, and, like, they last, like, 2 weeks or so, maybe a month before the person is like, okay, I can't really do this, or I'm like, I can't really do this. So, like, is it wise for me to get into a relationship if I have fears of, like, abandonment and all that? Like, his birthday's coming up, and I have some resentment about that because, like, he's still with his biological family, whereas with me, I'm from a third world country, and I'm from Ukraine, and my birth mom dropped me off at the hospital and signed her away her rights, and I spent 4 years in an orphanage with, let's say, horrible living conditions and all that. Is it wise, and what could I do about maybe making this relationship last longer?
Well, really one of the most important things, and what you said about being in an orphanage in the Ukraine for the first 4 years of your life is huge. And I'm sure I don't have to tell you that, because the first 3 years of life are when we form our ability to attach and to bond. So the fact that you were abandoned at such a young age and were not adopted quickly and were in an orphanage like that, and I've done a lot of reading and research about orphanages, and at one point I was involved with an organization that provided programs to help children in China to have better conditions so that they could form attachment. So you're coming from a very strong disadvantage. And the number one thing I would recommend to you before I even answer your question about the logistics of dating is for you to get into some intensive therapy with someone who has a specialty in understanding attachment disorders. Because, again, your roadmap that you got as a child, your primary love object, which was mom and dad, they abandoned you. And so when our first love object is so unsafe and abandons us, it makes us hard to trust any relationship and any love object, which is a potential new boyfriend for you. So the number one thing for you to do is to get into therapy so that you can really work on this. If you're going to be in a relationship with someone, you're going to have to go very slow. You're going to have to be hyper aware of your issues and your triggers and really work on separating, because on one hand, when we get into relationships, our relationships heal our history. There's some history we have to heal on our own, but there's some history that we can't heal without being in a connected, loving relationship. But my sense of you is that you don't yet have the foundation for that kind of relationship yet, and that therapy is going to be key. So before you jump into another relationship, I'd say with this guy, take it very slow, but get yourself into therapy with someone who really understands attachment disorders. I'm Dr. Jen Mann, and this is Loveline. And now I am speaking with Brittany.
Hi there.
Hey, Brittany. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm such a big fan. I'm glad to talk to you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, I kind of chatted before about what I'm calling in about, but would you like to kind of run through it?
It wasn't me you were chatting with, so tell me everything from the start.
Yeah, absolutely. First off, I'm in a deeply fulfilling three-year relationship. Uh-huh. I've been with my boyfriend pretty consistently for those 3 years, and we've been through a lot, some major milestones. Uh-huh. He is, however, 16 years my senior. Uh-huh. And I've never dated anyone who's divorced or has children. And his children are much older, in their 20s. Uh-huh. But it's a great situation. Very emotionally supportive. I feel very connected, great chemistry in every regard. Mm-hmm. But I think what I'm finding now is I am very much in a position where I'm blissful. Things are wonderful. I'm so happy. And, the idea of marriage is very, exciting for me. I'm 32 and it seems like, the next step, it seems logical. Mm-hmm. And, given his history and his divorce, which was somewhat difficult, he's reticent to move forward. And, we've had those conversations where I've asked before, is this just not the right time? Do we need to, slow down? And he's advised me, he just needs, he needs time, needs patience, doesn't want to break.
And when you say he needs time, are you talking about marriage specifically or just to deepen the relationship? Like, be specific.
To warm to the idea of marriage. I think at this point, the idea.
So wait, he's not saying he needs time to be ready to get married. He needs time to warm, to get ready to warm to marriage.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which isn't a great
sign.
If marriage is really important to you, if you were someone who had been married before, or you were someone who were saying marriage is not that important to me, that wouldn't concern me. But it concerns me that it sounds like marriage is very important to you. How old are you?
32.
And you've never been married, right?
Never married, no.
And you've been with him for 3 years. How long do you think you'd be willing to wait for him to start to warm up to the idea of marriage?
Well, see, that's the difficulty. We've recently, gotten news that he has a prostate cancer diagnosis.
Oof.
And so we're now stepping into a whole new realm of seriousness. You know, this year he lost his mother and I was with him when she passed away. So we've gone through major milestones together and he's cognizant of that. You know, he's advised to other people, you know,
I mean, look, here's my thought. You obviously can't pressure a man with prostate cancer, especially depending on how serious it is, on, you know, hey, TikTok, I need to get married. It's time to go. Like, you need to get with it. So you're kind of in a position, depending on how serious and scary this is for him, you know. And look, granted, there are a lot of men who live a lifetime with prostate cancer and nothing happens and everything's fine. But I do think if marriage is really important to you, you're 32 years old, if you want to have children, this may not be the guy for you. And at some point, you're going to have to figure out if your resentment about not getting married, if his inability to take that step becomes such a source of tension where you're so resentful that it's leaking out to the relationship, then it's going to be time for you to go. But trust me, you'll know when that time is. I'm Dr. Jen Mann, and I will be right back.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris.
On Channel Q.
Hey, this is Dr. Jen Mann sitting in for Chris, and it's time to slide into the DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding into my DMs, brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. It's a big, sexy world. Explore with confidence. So I got this DM from someone who says, "What do you suggest to someone who is genuinely distressed at the amount of sex they are having? Feels automatic, compulsive, and frequently disassociative. For example, frequently having 3 to 4 anonymous sex partners a night. Anything you would suggest besides go to therapy?" Well, first of all, I have to tell you, if you are having such disassociative sex, such frequent sex, I mean, that's like a full-time job, having sex with 3 or 4 people a night. Typically, what I see in my clinical practice is that is a sign of trauma. Sometimes it can be a sign of anxiety, but more times than not, it's a sign of trauma in your history that maybe you remember, maybe you don't, but that kind of disassociation is really a red flag for me. When someone is sexually compulsive, typically, there are kind of 4 stages. There's the preoccupation where you can't stop thinking about it. The ritualization, kind of these rituals that you may do on your hunt to find someone. The third is the behavior, the sexual act itself. And the fourth is the despair. That a lot of the time, people who are acting out sexually and compulsively like that afterwards feel terrible about themselves and vow not to do it again. So really the key is a 12-step program, possibly an inpatient program. And I know you said that you didn't like the idea of going to therapy, but it's really important because if you don't address the underlying issue or trauma, it's not going to change. I'm Dr. Jen Mann. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and I am on the line with Keith.
Hello.
Hi there, Keith. We don't have a lot of time.
How are you?
I'm good. Talk fast because I want to help you as much as I can in the 4 minutes we have.
Okay, 4 minutes. I have been in a relationship for 2 years with a lady who both of us had previous marriages, only one marriage each, both about 28 years. She had 4 children with her first husband. I had 3 with my first wife. Mm-hmm. And we thought we had a lot of things in common, and I told her, you know, my history, and I gave her pretty much what turned me off of my wife with being a little bit condescending, and she got, over the years, she got very, out of power trip with herself. She lost weight, so all of a sudden she was wearing higher heel shoes than our daughter, more modern dresses than our daughter, got very narcissistic, and it just turned me off. Mm-hmm. Anyways, to make a long story short, My girlfriend's down to earth and everything else, except when it comes to what you said at the beginning of your program. That's what lit my fire to call you.
Uh-huh. Glad you did.
She focuses on the details. I think there's some OCD or ADHD or something there, because she'll focus on the details to the point where she'll do repeats. Mm-hmm. The other night we went to church, and
it's like she'll say something to you over and over again.
Yeah, you were late. You know, we didn't have to do that. You disrespected me by being, we're not late. We're on time to church. Yeah, but I wanted to go to Home Depot to pick up something. I said, well, Home Depot's open until 10 o'clock. We could go after church.
Keith, you know, in my experience as a therapist, the main reason why people repeat things over and over again is that they don't feel like their words are landing. They don't feel like the response is satisfying them, and they don't feel heard. So what I would recommend, if you want to help her to shut this down, she's saying it over and over again, she's not getting what she needs from you. So what you want to start to do is, when she says whatever it is she says, you want to repeat it back to her. So she says, we're late. You say, it sounds like you're really upset that we're late. Repeat back to her. When in doubt, narrate what your partner is saying. But I think that she needs a little more TLC from you. And I know it's a little hard when you're feeling like she's being a little narcissistic. She's on a power trip. She's lost this weight. But I think that there's a negative dynamic that has developed in your relationship where you guys are a little gruff with each other, and that you are not hearing each other fully and responding to each other with empathy. And I think if you up your empathy with her, you may find that she is more connected to you. I'm Dr. Jen Mann. I am here on Loveline, ready to take your calls. And in the next hour, I'm going to have one of the most amazing guests, Janine Driver, who is a body language expert. She is known as the human lie detector. She is going to tell you everything you need to know if someone is lying to you, to know what to do on a first date, and everything else.
Loveline. Loveline.
This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Jen Mann. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and I am sitting in here for Chris. You may know me from VH1 Couples Therapy or my InStyle magazine column, Hump Day with Dr. Jen. You can follow me on social media at Dr. Jen Mann, two N's on Jen, two N's on Mann. And for this next hour, you're going to get so much information that's going to change your life. I have the great fortune of having Janine Driver on the show. I've had her on many, many seasons of my show Couples Therapy and on Family Therapy with Dr. Jen as well, because she just blows my mind every time. There's not a time that I don't sit with Janine and learn something. She is the CEO of the Body Language Institute, which is an exclusive certification program that provides companies and leaders the fastest way to save time and make money. She's also a New York Times bestselling author of the book You Say More Than You Think, which I gotta tell you, if you don't have it, you want it. Because what Janine does is Janine reads body language and she tells you all about what you need to know. She's known as the human lie detector. And I can speak from experience from having her on my show. She knows what she's doing. She knows when someone is lying from the way they breathe, the way they blink, the way they look, the way they touch their face, you name it. She has spent over 16 years as a federal law enforcement officer within the Department of Justice investigating skinheads, firearms, traffickers, the manufacture of illegal explosives, and fanatical survivalists. She is so quick, so amazing, so insightful that I am just so thrilled. I had to bring her here. The minute that I found I was sitting in for Chris, I was like, I got to bring Janine on, because here are some things that I want to know. And before I welcome her to the show, I want to know who lies more, men or women. I want to know, how do we know if our partner is lying to us? I want to know what we should be looking for on a first date. I want to know the most common giveaways of a cheating spouse, and a whole lot more. We'll take your calls too. If you want to call us and ask questions, I might just hog her up the whole time because I have so many questions for her and she has such a wealth of information. Janine Driver, welcome to Loveline.
Dr. Jen, I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for bringing me on.
It is so my pleasure. So just to start, I'm curious, who lies more, men or women?
I think I'm going to rephrase your question slightly, okay. And I'm going to say, who lies bigger? So because men and women, we lie about the same, research shows. However, men lie to make things bigger. So what I mean by that is,
like anatomy?
Everything, yes. So they'll lie about their height. They'll lie about how much money they make. They'll lie about how much power they have. They'll lie about how many sexual partners they may have had. And they'll lie both in person, on the phone, in personal ads. They inflate they want to look bigger to us. Well, we do the opposite, right? What do we do as women? We lie about our weight. We take it down a notch. We lie about how many partners we may have had. We take it down a notch. So while the men will boast and conceal and falsify, we are, try to make things look smaller. I had to be very modest.
I totally get that. And look, I can only speak as a woman. I'm not going to lie. I've lied about my weight. I've lied about a few of those things for sure. How can we tell if our partner is lying to us?
That's such a loaded question.
Well, that's why I have you on for an hour.
I love it. So there's different ways. Some are through words and some is through body language. The number one missed tell with regard to body language is a shoulder shrug. So if you're talking to your significant other, your spouse, and there's a shoulder shrug means uncertainty. So if you're asking him or her, do you want to go to lunch at Mexican or Italian or Chinese food, and they go, I don't know, what do you want? A shoulder shrug makes sense, right? You get it?
Sure, like I don't care that much.
And they're shrugging.
Who cares?
Yeah. But if I say, hey, was your ex-girlfriend at the party last night, your high school reunion? And he's like, no. And your husband shoulder shrugs, well, now we have a problem because he's saying a definitive answer, but he's shrugging, which is uncertainty. Now, it doesn't mean the ex-girlfriend's there. Maybe he's wondering, why are you still bringing her up, dude? Mm-hmm. It just means there's something he's uncertain about. You follow me?
I do. And what other tells should we look for? We got the shoulder shrug.
Okay.
What else should we look for?
You're looking for a change. If you think your significant other is stepping out on you, you're looking for a change in his behavior. One of the biggest ones, of course, is the cell phone change, where before, you know, he'd have his phone, he'd put it down, it's here or there, but now all of a sudden it's constantly with him wherever he goes or constantly with her. This is a change in their behavior. We call this a deviation in their normal behavior. So look for the cell phone change. Every time the phone is now on the counter, it's always turned down so those text messages don't pop up with a little sneak peek.
Mm-hmm.
And this one surprises people, Dr. Jen, which is he may or she may become more amorous, right? So they may become more sexual towards you. So pay attention to that, because all of a sudden it's this uncertainty that people can thrive under. You know, it's one of our basic needs, human needs, is uncertainty. And one of the unhealthy ways people get it is through cheating. So you're going to also look for the obvious things. All of a sudden they're grooming better. Some of the less obvious ones are, in the past he was very affectionate or she was very affectionate, and now all of a sudden they flinch. Mm-hmm. In public, when you go in to hug them from behind or give them a kiss. And it's kind of they turn from a kiss from the lips to the side of the face.
And yeah, I read a study once, I think it was M. Gary Newman, his study of cheaters. And he said that when someone who is cheating is asked by their spouse if they're cheating, I think it was something like 80% of them said no, they weren't.
Well, and the big tip here is, are they laughing? What? I love you. What are you talking about? I love you. When people start to suddenly smile or laugh, when you're trying to have a serious conversation, yeah, this is the major hotspot here. So be careful. Notice if all of a sudden they're laughing. As a matter of fact, this is going to sound crazy, Jen, is when they burp and yawn. So what I say, if there's a burp or a yawn going on, there's an increase in stress going on. And we saw this with, who's the guy, the real estate guy, what's his name? And he killed a lot of people. He killed a friend of his, her name was Susan Berman. He's the big tycoon out of New York City. His name will come to me, but
okay.
The big smoking gun here was when he was being interviewed by MTV or one of these shows, Netflix or something. He forgot he had the mic on, and he went into the bathroom in front of the mirror.
The one Robert they did Durst. The documentary on.
Yes.
Yes,
Robert
I know.
Durst. His
yes.
name is Robert Durst.
Yeah.
So what they showed for Robert Durst is they showed a picture that was written to the police department and said Beverly Hills in block letters, saying, hey, this woman is dead, I killed her. And then they go to the place, the house, Susan Berman's house, and what's happening inside is there's a letter with block letters, Beverly Hills spelled wrong again, and they show in this documentary both letters to this guy, Robert Durst, the murderer, and they go, which one's yours? He goes, well, obviously this one. Then they just show the words Beverly Hills. They just highlight that, and he begins to burp and yawn. So when there's an increase in stress going on, look for the burp and the yawn. Physiologically, the stress is creating. This is why people in job interviews burp and yawn all the time, and they don't get the job because of it. And what the people don't realize is that might have been the best candidate. They were just really nervous and wanted to be believed.
Well, I just have to tell you, you're blowing minds here behind in the control room. Like, literally, his eyes are bugging out. And he's going, oh, my God. Oh, my God.
People yawn all the time in interviews. So if you're talking to your significant other and you think he or she is cheating on you and they start yawning, or all of a sudden they start burping, guess what? There's an increase in stress. And a big one, this is the one I talk about a lot, which is anger. And you know this, Dr. Jen. Anger is often a secondary emotion to things like fear, surprise. I mean, fear, anxiety, and sadness. Mm-hmm. And so often when we get closer to the truth and you're asking these questions, they'll suddenly get angry. I've already answered that question 6 times. It's ridiculous. This is why you have no friends. Jen, this is why you have no friends. This is why your mother is your only friend. It's embarrassing. You know, you saw this. I don't know if you remember this movie with Gwyneth Paltrow.
Hold on one sec, Janine. I'm going to put you on hold because we're gonna go to a little music. But when we come back, I want to hear more about the anger. And I also want to know what techniques that we can borrow from law enforcement when we are interrogating our partners.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Jen Mann. I am a licensed psychotherapist. I'm sitting in for Chris while he is out this week. And I am talking with Janine Driver, who is a body language expert who is known as the human lie detector. And I can speak firsthand watching her work. She's been on my show, VH1 Couples Therapy with Dr. Jen and Family Therapy with Dr. Jen. And she blows my mind every single season. So I'm thrilled to welcome Janine back to the show. And Janine, we were talking before the break. What I want to know is what techniques, you've worked with law enforcement a lot. What techniques can we steal from law enforcement, from interrogators, from investigators when it comes to asking questions, whether it's at home or at work or with our friends? What can we borrow from them? What can we steal?
All right, a couple basics that everyone should be doing and then what to look for on their responses. Number one is you should think like a hostage negotiator and assign people the traits you want them to have. When the hostage negotiator, my mentor, Jim Cavanaugh, spoke to David Koresh over at the Branch Davidians in Waco, Texas, years ago, at the whole siege that happened, Jim Cavanaugh said, "Hey, David Koresh, everyone says you're a man of your word. Is this true?" And David Koresh said, "Yes." What's he going to say? "No, he's a preacher." And then everyone says, "You are a respectful person. Is this true?" And he again says, "Yes." Then the hostage negotiator, Jim Cavanaugh, says, "If I get your words read on the National Christian Radio Network, will you let women and children go?" David Koresh says, "Yes." And when he does, he begins to follow through with his word. Mm-hmm. So what does this mean for you in dating and your marriage? It means make sure you assign your significant other the traits you want them to have. Stop saying, "Don't lie to me. Don't lie to me." We don't hear "don't." And so you're giving them an embedded command to their subconscious level. Lie to me, lie to me, lie to me. It's like saying to the kid, "Don't eat that broccoli. Don't you eat that broccoli."
And then that's all they want.
They gobble it up, right? They're like,
"Hey, and they're obsessed with it." Yeah.
Right. So stop saying, whatever you do, "Don't lie to me. Don't lie to me, Mike. Don't lie to me." Stop saying that. Instead say, "Mike, one of the things I admire about you is that, listen, we're both not perfect. When you make a mistake, you own it. You come clean, you own it, because this relationship is important to you, right?" It's critical that you get them to say yes. And if they are lying to you, what has happened when you get them to say, "You're an honest person, right? You, when you make a mistake, you own it, right?" When he begins to say yes, guess what Mike does? You have now hijacked his brain and you create cognitive dissonance from reality versus what he's saying is true. And this is where the truth can come out. Now, what you want to look for when he's talking to you, your Mike, whoever your Mike might be, is especially eye touching. So eye touching is a big, big tell. It's very common. We see this over and over again that there's an issue here. You see it in boardrooms when someone disagrees with something that's being said, and you see this when people are lying to you in your relationship. They'll also turn their body away from you. I call this the belly button rule. We face our belly button towards people we like, admire, and trust. When we turn our belly button towards a door or an exit, we want out of there. I call this naval intelligence.
Naval intelligence. That's really cute.
So spot where your significant other's belly button's going. My friend Terry Moore in New York City, her husband Nikolai goes, "Terry, my belly button's been facing the door for 15 minutes. Let's go. Enough with the lipstick."
That's great.
Also look for neck touching. So neck touching happens with stress and anxiety. Women
when we're stressed, when, so for the boys, for the men that are here, us women, when we lie or we're stressed, we go to the nape of our neck, the back of our neck, and lift our hair up from the bottom. Men tend to ventilate from the top. They make their fingers almost into a comb and brush their hair, or they'll pat the back of their head. So if someone is saying yes to you, yes, honey, I love you, yes, you look great, and they're patting the back of their head or they're lifting up their hair from the back, that agreement has just turned to disagreement. So that yes, they're saying yes, and they're nodding their head yes, but what you might not have noticed in the past is they're doing this pacifying gesture. They're touching their hair or their neck at the same time, and that turns agreement to disagreement.
That's fascinating. Just so you know, in the studio, we're doing everything physical as you're saying it. We're patting the back of our head. We're touching our necks. We're combing our hair. We're doing all of it just to, like, try out and see what it looks. I hope those of you listening are doing that as well. We're giving it a
from
run.
From O.J. Simpson to the whole Wienergate that happened a couple of years ago, when people get busted doing something they weren't supposed to do, they'll often compress their lips. So I say when we don't like what we see or hear, our lips disappear. So if you compress your lips and look in the mirror and say, I am happy I am here today, you'll feel how weird it feels. My sister, one of her kids stole $20 from her wallet and she lined all four kids up. And she asked one at a time, Bella, did you take the money? Brooke, did you take the money? Tommy, did you take the money? When she got to Jake, he said no and then compressed his lips. She let the other three kids go from their cages.
She said, I've been listening to Janine. I know. You pressed your lips. You're guilty.
Yeah. He goes, all right, I took it, but Dad borrowed $20 from me, and I thought that if I took it from you, you could get it back from Dad. Kerry called me up and said, hey, this stuff you teach, Janine, really works.
Now, let me ask you something, because I've spent a lot of time with you on the show and as friends, and so I've learned a lot from you, and I've noticed that there are certain things that I naturally do. Like, I'm a face toucher. You know, I tend to, like, yes, as I'm having conversations, I touch my face. So because of you, I try to now, I'm more aware of it, and I'm aware of the signals that it gives out. Can people train themselves not to do these things so they don't give away a lie or so they don't give away something emotional that they're going through? Can people kind of read your book and then become good liars?
You can become better at it, not perfect, because some of the expressions that we make on our face, like our lips disappearing like that, you don't realize you're doing it. It's subconscious. Or when you're burping or you're yawning, it's this physiological response that happens. Can you do some positive moves that make you look confident? Sure. You could do an elbow pop. You could do a steeple. You can keep your body open. Stop folding your hands. When you sit with folded hands, it's like, please believe me, please believe me. Pay attention to if you're trying to withhold something, say you're having a surprise party for your significant other,
Janine,
and you don't want to let them out.
Hold that thought. When we come back, I want to ask you, what should we be looking for on a first date? And also, how can we spot deception online?
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
Hey, this is Dr. Jen Mann. I'm sitting in for Dr. Chris for this week, and I'm speaking with Janine Driver, who was trained as a lie detection expert for the ATF, the FBI, and the CIA. You don't want to mess with this woman. You certainly don't want to lie to her. And I'm having her in tonight, and she's talking to us all about everything we need to know about body language and about deception that we can take home to our romantic relationships, our friends, our family, in our career. So Janine, thank you so much for being here tonight. I'm so excited. And what I really want to ask you next is, what should we be looking for on a first date?
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I think it's a two-part question is, how do you become the best version of you on that date, which is, you know, be yourself. You know, stop trying to pretend to be someone else. I say, you know, be you unapologetically, and you'll find the person that's going to like you for you. Otherwise, you're going to get exhausted by date six, trying to constantly, like, be the person who's all prim and proper. You know, if you're a swearing person, you know, you're swearing Christian or whatever, you know what? Be a swearing Christian. Like, if you're the type of person that is mortified by swearing, be the best version of you. Like, I have a live-in au pair, and she doesn't like people who swear. and she was dating this guy who's swearing, and she said, "Ah, it's so interesting to me. You have such beautiful, sexy lips, and you give such sweet kisses, and to have such ugly words come from those beautiful lips." Wow. Guess what? He stopped swearing. She didn't just say, "Stop swearing." You know, you can be the best version of you. Looking for the other person, keep in mind that belly button rule. We face our belly button towards people we like, admire, and trust. If he's looking at you, or she's looking at you, but her belly button is turned towards your friend, yeah, he probably wants more to do with your friend than to you.
Or even someone else in the restaurant.
Right, or someone else at the restaurant. So pay attention to that behavior. Pay attention to, does he or she, are they looking at your lips? So this is a sexual behavior. When someone, instead of giving you eye contact, they look down at your lips.
Oh,
they may even touch their own lips. So these are all good signs. Pay attention. How much eye contact is the person giving you? Does it change throughout the date? The more eye contact, then it's not always a good thing. Sometimes it could be a bad thing. So auditory people process through sound, so they'll lend you an ear. So don't think the person doesn't like you because they're not giving you eye contact out of the gate. You want to get their baseline talking about non-threatening questions and, you know, about work or whatever. I think the most important thing here is Harvard did a study on this. When we meet someone for the first time, we're asking two questions. Can I respect this person and can I trust this person? Mm-hmm. And the more important question is, can I trust this person? And that's connected with warmth and likability. So be warm and likable. Can I respect this person is connected with competence. Be careful of coming in with your credentials and what you do for work first. Mm-hmm. And look for that in those other people. Think about it, the caveman days. Did the caveman say, can this guy make a good fire? Or is this guy going to kill me when I go to sleep tonight?
Sure.
It's more important, is this guy going to kill me when I go to sleep tonight? Which is that trust. So be trust, be warm. Nice touches on the arms or the hands. Those, if you're going to the restroom, reach out, touch him on the hand. Hey, I'm going to run to the restroom, I'll be right back. Get a couple touches in there.
Oh, I like that. A little flirting.
And do not, whatever you do, do not sit in a booth if you're going out to dinner directly opposite them. This is the fighting pose. You're going to increase stress and anxiety in them and increase it in you. So go 30% off center in the booth so you have a visual way out and they do, and the date will go a lot better.
Interesting. And is that just for a first date or in general?
No, in job interviews, first dates, in law enforcement, we start at a diagonal to build rapport, but when you start to lie to us, we go directly opposite you to increase that stress and anxiety.
Oh, that's so interesting. Now, how can we spot deception online? Yeah, you know, we are in a social media world, and how can we spot that?
The first thing on spotting online, incidentally, I met my husband on Match.com. Thank you, Match.com.
I love it.
So what happens is you want to pay attention to the language when people tell you who they are not. Nixon told us he was not what? A crook. Really? So I tell you I'm the mother of three sons, Angus, Charlie, and Jack. I don't say, hey, Dr. Jen, I am not the mother of six daughters. We tell people who we are. We do not tell people who we are not. So if you're online, whatever it is, Tinder, Match.com, the Christian thing, the Jewish thing, whatever it is, you want to make sure if someone says, I'm not the kind of person that would cheat on you. Really? That's like you saying, really? That's such good news because I'm not the kind of person, if you don't call me back, that's going to stalk you like a Carrie Underwood song and then like, you know, destroy your truck with by keying it. So pay attention to people telling you who they are not. Also, watch out for the person that says things like actually or left. The word left means drama. So I'll give you an example. I left the party at 10 o'clock. That indicates there's some type of drama that happened at the party. If there's no drama, I say, I went home at 10 o'clock. Left always means drama. Your wife goes missing. The police interview you. And you're like, I left my wife at the office at 2 o'clock. The cop immediately knows you and your wife were fighting or there was some type of drama at the office. The cop will say, hey, were you guys fighting? As soon as you say no, was there some type of drama there? No. The cops now know you're a liar. Left, we leave things that we have drama connected to. We go to places we're excited to go to. So I went home at 10 o'clock is different. So pay attention if someone suddenly uses the word left. And the other word is actually. Actually compares two things. So whether this is in the write-up or when you first start texting each other or calling each other, hey, what'd you do this weekend? Actually, I went bowling with a friend of mine. Actually compares two things. Did you buy the blue truck or the red car? Actually, I bought the red car. We now know you compared it to the blue truck. When someone says actually to you on a phone call or in a text message, ask yourself, what were they really doing?
So actually, they might have really gone to the whorehouse instead of bowling.
Right. Who knows what happens? But there's something they're not telling you. And be careful of the I swear to God. And if you ask someone a question, make sure they answer directly. No is the strongest denial. Did you cheat on your wife in your marriage? Absolutely not. I'm a Christian. I don't believe in that. Did you have an affair? What kind of person do you think I am? I would never do something like that. Yeah, O.J. Simpson said when asked, did you own Bruno Magli's shoes? And this is important because they're at the scene of the crime. Bruno Magli's shoe prints at the scene of the crime. And Bruno and O.J. Simpson said, I would never own those ugly blank shoes. I would never. Didn't mean he didn't. And I show a video clip of him being shown a picture of him walking in a football field. And what's he wearing? Those ugly
Bruno Magli's shoes. Yeah. That's
so
amazing.
Pay attention to that. I would never do that is not saying no. No is a denial. A strongest denial is always no, not absolutely not. It's truthful people convey, Dr. Jen. Liars try to convince. They oversell you.
That's so interesting. Okay, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to listen to some music. When we come back, I'm going to read an email, and I'm going to ask you, Janine, we need to know, tell us the top myth about liars.
So, oh my gosh, that's going to be fun.
Okay, so we will be right back with the top myths about liars, and I'm going to answer a question.
Loveline. 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 This is Loveline with Dr. Chris.
On Channel Q.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Jen Mann, licensed psychotherapist. And by the way, you can find me on social media at Dr. Jen Mann, two ends on Jen, two ends on man. But now, it's time to slide into my DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding into my DMs brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. It is a big, sexy world. Explore it with confidence. And here is what this person is asking me. They sent me this DM. My husband and I haven't had sex for over 2 years. We have a short vacation planned for our anniversary, and I'm not sure if I can get aroused by him anymore. I'm scared of rejecting him during this trip. I'm usually the one that gets rejected. Any tips for reigniting some sort of attraction for a long-term partner? Now, first of all, it's gonna feel weird. What you have to understand, when you haven't had sex with your partner for 2 years, it feels uncomfortable. It almost feels incestuous. They feel like family. So you have to be able to tolerate the weirdness to get to the goodness. And if you can tolerate it being uncomfortable and awkward, you can get there. There are a few things you need to know. The first is that a lot of the time when you're in a long-term relationship, your arc of sexual desire changes. We tend to think that the way it's going to be is we have desire, then we get aroused, then orgasm, then resolution. But a lot of the time when we're in a long-term relationship, we are less likely to have random sex thoughts. For some people who don't follow that typical arc, they're not going to have an urge before getting aroused. A lot of the time what happens is you have sex and then desire follows. So one of the things to keep in mind is that sometimes just having sex creates desire. If you wait for the desire, you may not end up having sex. The second thing is sometimes you got to prep yourself. You got to be your own fluffer. Watch a little porn, read some erotica, have some fantasy time, take matters into your own hands, but don't take yourself to completion, but get yourself worked up, tune into your body signals. And then the third thing is sometimes you just got to take one for the team. Typically, sex begets sex. When we're not having sex, our hormone levels change. And when we do have sex, we tend to have more testosterone going that makes us more desirous. And it also creates connection in our relationship. And then fourth, put in the effort. Couples who have great sex lives really work on their communication. They educate themselves about sex. They don't just go, oh, I know how to make this person happy. They actually study it to learn some new moves. They give each other feedback and also take the time to get to know your own body. This has been presented by Trojan Condoms. It is a big, sexy world. Explore it with confidence. And now I am very excited to go back to Janine Driver, our amazing body language expert who has done lie detection for ATF, FBI, CIA. She is the author of the New York Times best-selling book, You Say More Than You Think. And Janine, my last question for you is, what is the top myth that people think about liars that is just not true?
People think, and I've had men say this to me, that your eyes move in a direction that indicate you're lying. And that was scientifically proven incorrectly at Rutgers University about 12 years ago. this has to do with neurolinguistic programming. Neuro is the brain, linguistics, language, programming is your map of the world. And your eyes do go in different movements to recall something, and they go in a different direction to create an answer. The problem is, if I said to you, Dr. Jen, describe your mother's face to me, you might go, your eyes might move in the direction that's connected with creating an answer, but you should know what your mother's face looks like. But your brain is just imagining your mother's face floating in air. So therefore, your eyes go in a direction that looks like you're creating because you are creating. It's how you take and interpret the question. So eye movement is the biggest myth with detecting deception. I remember my mom said to my sister when she was little, I'll meet you outside of Sears when the mall closes. She was 14. My sister went outside of Sears in the parking lot. My mother meant outside of Sears inside the mall. It depends on how someone is interpreting your question is where the eyes are going to move. So be careful of that. And crossed arms. Crossed arms does not mean you're bored and disinterested. It simply means you're using both sides of your brain. Your right brain controls your left side of your body. Your right brain is intuitive and takes risks. Your left brain, that likes facts and figures and logic, controls the right side of your body. When you cross your arms, you're 30% more likely to solve a difficult problem or task. Think about in law enforcement. I arrive at the scene of a crime. One of the first things the cop does is she crosses her arms. Why? She's using both sides of her brain to solve this case. So it does not mean your hubby or your wifey or your significant other is bored because she crosses her arms or he crosses his arms. Maybe, just maybe, he's really processing what you're saying and thinking about it.
That's really interesting because as long as I've known you and as much reading I've done, I still kind of have that myth. I know there have been times with Eric where he's had his arms crossed where we're talking like, whoa, why are you so defensive, man?
Yeah, he's just using
now I know better. Yeah, now I know better. Yeah,
it's a good reminder, I think, to have every now and then. And if I can help your listeners in any way, you know, they can reach out to me. And
what's your social media? Where can people find you?
So I'm on Janine Driver. My Facebook page, I have a business Facebook page and social media and Instagram and LinkedIn and all that fun stuff. Janine is J-A-N-I-N-E Driver. And I have online training if people want to take me at home. And I get to come home with you and one-on-one work with you on everything from the secrets behind what's really happening with anger and more details on detecting deception. And I say, if you want to read and influence human behavior, be sure to visit. It's called Blue Streak Training. BlueStreakTraining.com. And Blue Streak is a bolt of lightning. And when it lightnings out and thunder, you change the direction of your life immediately. And what I can give to you, it will change the direction of your life forever. My life's purpose is to inspire people to look at their world differently. And I say, I give you the lenses that I gave the CIA and the FBI and Scotland Yard. And today I give to companies like Coca-Cola and Booz Allen Hamilton and Lockheed Martin and dating couples.
You do in your book. I mean, your book, everybody needs to go out and get this book. If you found her tips helpful tonight, and how could you not, then you need her book. You say more than you think. It's amazing.
Yeah, and I have Land Your Man dating cards for the ladies.
Oh.
It's called Land Your Man with Random House.
I love
They're
it.
They're really fun.
I love
this
it.
Is fun, Dr. Jen. I love you.
Thank you so much for coming and sharing your wisdom with all of us. And thank you all for listening tonight. I am Dr. Jen Mann. I'm a licensed psychotherapist. You can find me on social media at Dr. Jen Mann, DrJennMann, two ends on Jen, two ends on Mann. I will be back tomorrow night and Thursday while Chris is out. So if you didn't get through to me tonight, give me a call tomorrow. I want to hear from you. Whatever your issue is, sex, love, dating, relationship, whatever it is. And also, we will be talking with attorney, and you've seen her on every TV station, and social activist Lisa Bloom. Can't wait. See you tomorrow.
Love line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.